Welcome to Federal Insights for June, sponsored by Thundercat Technology in partnership with Dell Technologies.
You've got a better chance for success in artificial intelligence and machine learning when systems supporting development activities are carefully architected and when data sources are curated and staged properly. I discussed this at length with the Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department, Brian Campo.
You know, anytime you talk about AI, machine learning, you really have to start with the data infrastructure, right? So that is sort of the foundational component. So, you know, one of the things we've been doing at DHS is trying to, better catalog, better coalesce, and better sort of assimilate all the different data sources that we've got across the department. So we recently hired our chief data officer, and we've been working on trying to get some, data cataloging efforts going. So that is really fundamental. We've got a few different data governance tools. We're doing some larger data architecture. But when you sit down and actually talk about the systems, I think most of our AI and machine learning activities are really going to end up happening in the cloud. We had a big push to move out of the data centers. We're really focusing on trying to push new capabilities into the cloud. We've got a few cloud platforms that we leverage across all the different cloud providers. So really when we talk about infrastructure and AI, it is primarily going to be in the cloud. We do some local prototyping in a few different, non-cloud assets. But when we're pushing things out for mission impacting AI and machine learning, it is absolutely going to happen in the cloud, because what we want is, the scalability. We want to have the ability to, gain those insights quickly, and cloud really leverages that for us.
In some ways, that's the original use of cloud, is for a workspace for application development.
Absolutely.
And just maybe give us a sense of how you differentiate, if you do, among AI and machine learning and even robotic process automation. They're always talked about in the same breath, and they are related, but they're not precisely the same thing.
Yeah, no, in fact, they're quite different, right? And the easiest way to think of it is, RPA, robotic process automation, is really just automation in general, right? It's taking things that are done manually, trying to put them into a context where, some sort of a system, whether it's an RPA tool, and sometimes it's just API orchestration, right? The original RPA was an orchestrator in front of a series of system application programming interfaces, APIs. So RPA is really just taking, manual tasks, right? Interacting with system A, system B, and system C, maybe moving data between those systems or collecting data from those systems to do an intrinsically manual task in an automated way. And that is something that we have done quite a bit of. We've got a few different RPA working groups across the department working with our components, really, again, trying to automate those manual tasks that align themselves to some sort of orchestration or automation. AI and ML, I think, the differentiation between those is really about what you're doing with the data, right? So machine learning is trying to take data and make it intrinsically more informative, trying to take those automated insights and figure them out and find them in new and interesting ways, uncovering things that we wouldn't necessarily be thinking about, or something that wouldn't occur to the operator. Now, artificial intelligence is sort of different than that, in that it's not about driving insights. It's about actually making impacts to some operational activity. Artificial intelligence, if you think about it in the ways that you hear about it in, the larger tech industry, AI is about learning how to drive a car, or, making a process more efficient, optimizing it. Those sorts of things where you are taking sort of an activity or an operation, trying to impact it in a meaningful way. And you're doing that through, sort of a repeated ongoing activity that has a defined outcome. So that's really, sort of where we're thinking about the differences between the three of them. I would say also, I think one of the things that we're trying to do in all three of those processes is we're really trying to cut through a lot of the hype and really trying to figure out how they impact the business. Because, AI for AI's sake, or machine learning for machine learning's sake, just to say you're doing it, does not impact the mission. And sometimes it leads you down some rabbit holes that can actually get you to different results that you don't want. So I think the first thing, the core thing that we're trying to do across all three of them is trying to define business cases, trying to define how those things can, how those technologies can impact the organization, and always letting that be our guide, always defining those things first before we take on any technology. And then, of course, you know, to your point, using the right technology for the right activity.
And which leads to the question of the organizational architecture, because you're in a central function at DHS, and if DHS has many, many components, each with their own missions and submissions. And so what is the, I guess, the human architecture such that the best ideas, the best use cases make it up to that development stage where they become projects?
Yeah, and I think so that actually touches on one of the other big priorities that CIO Eric Heisen has really pushed for us. One of the defining and critical things that we're going to do over the next probably year to year and a half is getting in front of, you know, the sort of customer experience, or getting in front of the stakeholder experience, making sure that we're understanding those that are going to be impacted by any technology that we put out, you know, whether it's AI, machine learning, you know, even RPA, right? You know, understanding and making sure that the end users are involved in the defining of the requirements, make sure that they're involved in, you know, sort of recapping and looking at retrospectives after we deliver a capability to make sure it is actually having the impact that we want. And then sort of to the other side of the point, you know, I think it a big piece of what we've got to do with any new technology is we do have to find those common elements that go across a department. You know, for those that don't know or are not inherently familiar with DHS, it is a very diverse organization, right? We've got a number of component agencies where the missions diverge quite a bit, right? We've got, you know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is looking at disaster relief, which is looking at how do we impact the lives of folks who have been harmed in some way. We've got the Cybersecurity Information Security Agency, which is looking at, you know, in the news every single day, you know, new companies being hacked, critical infrastructure, making sure that we protect it. We've got a variety of immigration components, Customs and Border Protection, which is, you know, looking at how do we maintain our borders? How do we ensure that only authorized things, people, products, technologies are entering and exiting the borders correctly? You know, so we've got a very, very wide array of organizational activities that we do. And one of the things that we're trying to do with any technology is trying to find those common elements, trying to figure out how do all of those technologies really impact, and where can we find commonalities between them so that as we push out and prioritize new technologies, we do it in a way that we can give the most benefit to the largest groups.
Brian Campo, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
AI has the potential to transform government agencies, accelerating processes and mission-critical functions. Thundercat Technology, in partnership with Dell Technologies, can optimize your AI ecosystem, simplify sourcing, deployment, and management of infrastructure designed for the data era, with plenty of what your agency's AI use cases demand to deliver better outcomes in a hybrid cloud world. Learn about our AI experience and capabilities at thundercattech.com/partners/Dell Tech. The future is now.
Welcome back to our interview with Brian Campo, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department. Our topic is how to engineer success in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And let's get back to the data for a moment and its interaction with the cloud, because a big concern that a lot of agencies face, no matter how they're using the cloud, is the data extraction costs, because clouds incentivize you to load up the data, but not to pull down the data. So how do you architect the applications, the data feeding, the training of the algorithms, all of this in the cloud so that you're not constantly pulling back down data sets and incurring a lot of cost, if my premise is correct.
So that is the million-dollar question, right? That is really where sort of the state of the art is happening, and you're absolutely correct. And I would say it's not just even the clouds, right? You know, a lot of the applications we're using are based over, you know, their cost models are based around the data that they process or ingest or egress. You know, ingest is always a little bit less expensive than egress, right? They want to incentivize you to get the data in there, as you said, but they make it really hard to get it out or really expensive to get it out. You know, and I think we're doing a lot of things. We do really look at edge processing. You know, that's an area where we are pushing for our AI capabilities to evolve and mature is in edge processing. So trying to process the data where it lives, it's much easier to move compute than it is to move data. It's quicker, for one, even if you take the cost element out of it. You know, you can move compute very quickly. We can build a new application in a new environment in, you know, a very small fraction of the time it would take us to move that data. So, you know, there are inherent benefits even outside of just the cost model of, you know, doing edge computing, pushing the compute where it lives. And then I think also we're trying to break down the way we do AI and ML into much smaller chunks so that we're only actually, if we have to move data, we're only moving those very small elements that are directly impacted by the part of the process. So rather than moving a huge data set, we might move a subset. We might even have an API that just feeds us little bits of data that we need. You know, so not necessarily even looking at trying to move large data sets. And then I would say the third part of it is, you know, trying to, again, co-locate, not just co-locate geographically or within the environment, but co-locate some of the AI and machine learning and just any data processing, any data analytics into as close to the system as it can be. So, you know, maybe looking at building out core data services and then having a way to kind of plug them into more of our applications. So much more modular in how we are architecting our AI, machine learning, and again, just any data analytics, right? You know, we talk about them as their, you know, sort of keywords, but any sort of data analytics, but modularizing it is also a big thing as well.
Sure. And just a side question, as part of this modularizing and as part of the kind of rationalizing where resources take place, edge computing, do you ever explore the idea of simply replicating a data facility in a cage somewhere in a co-location effort as opposed to using a commercial cloud?
Yeah. So and I'm glad you used the word rationalization, right? As the chief enterprise architect also for the department, rationalization is something that seems to have gone by the wayside. So it is, it's very good to hear somebody actually using that word again. And that's really what we're talking about, right? At the end of the day, we're talking about trying to figure out how to not have data living everywhere, right? Not to make data less less pervasive and much more meaningful and much more intentional in where we use it and where we put it. As far as replicating, though, right now, really what we're trying to do is, you know, maybe at a lower level than that, we're really trying to, again, coalesce the data. We're trying to figure out what data assets we have and then trying to figure out where we can make those data sets, you know, usable by all of our different groups. So, you know, we've got a few different immigration activities going on. So one of the things we're trying to do is trying to understand how the data from one immigration system can be leveraged by another. So we're not necessarily trying to move that data right now. Really, a lot of what we're doing is mapping data, coalescing data. But yes, I absolutely believe that as we get better and as our data is used more widely by systems that didn't initially start with access to the data, we will absolutely look at, you know, some replication. You know, again, like you said, maybe putting, you know, data architectures in place that define where a data is going to live so that we can have a, you know, sort of corollary that, you know, this particular data lives in this cloud or lives on this GSS or lives within this system boundary. So that we can figure out where those are and start to define things by where the data lives. I think that's absolutely something that we'll look at.
And tell us more about the data governance scheme, because, again, there's many, many components, and it could be that one immigration function component may have a same data need that's generated by another immigration component. And then you've got FEMA and Secret Service. I mean, it's a very diverse department. And so how do you govern the data? Because sometimes people are reluctant to throw it into the pot for anybody to have.
So that is absolutely true, especially in a department, like you said, as diverse as DHS is. We do. I like to say that the new CDO is as much a bridge builder as he is a data owner, and probably more so a bridge builder than a data owner. And Mike Horton, who is the new CDO, he is perfectly suited for that task. That is one of the things that Mike is just so good at, is really getting folks on the same page, helping them understand how, you know, data can be used, because, you know, again, it's a people business, right? You know, everything is a people business. Data is no different. AI and machine learning are no different. They're always people businesses, and you've got to work with the system owners. So, you know, getting back to the original idea is that, you know, the place where we've started with data governance is really around, you know, those data entities, defining data entities in a consistent manner, defining them in a way that, you know, provide some extensibility, right? So they can be used in special contexts where they need to be, but that they're not strictly different, right? A person should be a person in every system. An immigration record should be the same structure. It should have the same elements in every single system. So that's really where we started from a data governance perspective. But, you know, again, as the chief enterprise architect for the department, we're also doing a lot with data architecture, and that's really where we get into a lot of the API work, right? So the other thing, while we're defining data entities in a consistent manner, what we're trying to do in the Chief Technology Officer Directorate, and one of the things that I'm pushing for, is really defining our APIs in a consistent manner, so that when System A exposes an API, that API's data structure, that API's format, that API's, you know, as you dig into the API, you'll see things consistently. Because even if the data is structured in a cohesive, logical format, if the APIs are messy, if the APIs are statistically different, you can actually get data wrong from a system that is the authoritative system. So we want our data APIs to look consistent. We want them to act consistent. And we really want folks to be able to almost intrinsically understand the API of any system if it's in a given domain.
Yeah, so you've got the potential for reversing the old saw by saying shrimp cocktail in, garbage out.
Exactly. Yes. And look, you know, that is true, right? We have seen what good data can do in bad systems. That is one of the data owners, data scientists' worst nightmare, is data being used incorrectly or out of context. And so that can happen even when you don't intend for it, by poor data architecture and by poor system architecture when it comes to the APIs, because you can create, you know, sort of artificial relationships that don't even exist in the data. And you know, those are all the things that we're trying to focus on. And that's why this topic is so complex. And so it takes so much time, so many resources, and it is so difficult to do. And again, that's why you've got to focus on the data before you focus on the AI and the machine learning. If you don't get your data right, if you don't have your interfaces right, if the data doesn't have well-defined relationships, your AI and machine learning projects are never going to give you the results that you want, and you're only going to create more problems downstream. So that's why, again, we're taking the approach of really focusing on getting our data right, getting our data relationships right, and getting our data interfaces right before we take on large scale. And again, we've got some projects going on, but before we take on large scale AI and machine learning projects.
Brian Campo, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department. We'll return with the third and final segment of this interview after a short break. I'm Tom Temin.
AI has the potential to transform government agencies, accelerating processes and mission-critical functions. Thundercat Technology, in partnership with Dell Technologies, can optimize your AI ecosystem, simplify sourcing, deployment, and management of infrastructure designed for the data era, with plenty of what your agency's AI use cases demand to deliver better outcomes in a hybrid cloud world. Learn about our AI experience and capabilities at thundercattech.com/partners/Dell Tech. The future is now.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Brian Campo, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department. We've been discussing how to engineer success in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And what does the CDO do in all of this?
So again, the CDO is really where we've kind of drawn some soft lines. And again, the CDO is fairly new for DHS. The CDO is focused on governance. It's focused on how that data is defined, where that data is, you know, what the authoritative systems are for that data, where that data's relationships live, you know, all the things that define the entities of the data. You know, and then again, in the data architecture world, we're really focusing on where does that data live? Is the system owner that has that data, are they exposing that data in a consistent format? But the CDO also, when it comes to AI and machine learning, is really focusing on where that data might be useful. So understanding how the data is going to be extrapolated, how that data is going to eventually provide insights and information, you know, and where those insights need to be. So, you know, again, with the CDO being fairly new and him only having been on board for a couple of months now, you know, a lot of this is going to evolve. A lot of this is going to be more defined. And that is one of the things that the CDO and the CTO's offices are going to really focus on in 22 is really getting you know, more tangible outcomes from data, figuring out where that data consistency is going to actually be implemented. And then we can start to think about where we're going to leverage that data. Then we can really start putting together some large-scale AI and machine learning projects.
And how do you know when a training project, a development project, is ready for deployment? And then how does it get deployed?
So let me take the last part of that first, right? So how does it get deployed is another one of the things that my group, the CTO Directorate, has been focused on. Is, you know, getting SecDevOps in place. So, you know, making sure that as fast evolving projects, which AI and machine learning projects almost always are, you know, we want new data, we want to train that data quickly, we want to push out updates, we want to, you know, constantly be evolving how we're leveraging it. So, you know, SecDevOps is a big aspect of that. So getting build pipelines, getting automated testing in place, getting automation of security, getting those ATOs so that those ATOs can be continuous. So we're not going through 6, 9, 12 month cycles of batching updates, you know, and really focusing on trying to get capability from ideation through development all the way out to production as quickly as possible. Because again, you know, in AI and ML, you've got to do it quickly. You've got to be constantly evolving. You know, to the how are we developing them? You know, open source is a big part of it. Obviously, there is a lot of evolution going on in the open source tools for AI and machine learning, but also those, you know, those core platforms. You know, there, when you look at the cloud providers, one of the big differentiators between the government side of cloud providers and the public side of cloud providers is the number of services that are offered. We are starting to see some of those core AI offerings make their way over to the government side. So that also can be a huge facilitator. You know, when folks have already done the legwork of integrating 17 different, you know, chunks or widgets within an AI pipeline, you know, that can help us get things out quicker as well. But, you know, again, the larger part of getting things developed, getting them out into affecting the business, though, is going to be the people side. And it wouldn't be fair for me to say that the technology is going to drive it. I think honestly, on the government side, the people, the expertise, the subject matter experts, making decisions to work with the government, you know, hopefully making the decision to join the government, become federal personnel that can help guide this. That is going to be the biggest challenge. And I think that's something that the CDO is seeing. That is something that I'm seeing in the CTO's office. I think that's something that every technology program is seeing is, you know, the biggest challenge for us, I think, in the next in the next 18 months to 5 years is going to be getting the talented people that can really do the development. You know, we've got a lot of support services in place. We're going to have SecDevOps. We've got some continuous ATO things going. So we're getting that done. But getting the right people, getting the smart people, you know, getting those leaders in AI and ML into the government and getting them working with the government, that is going to be one of the challenges.
Brian Campo, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the Homeland Security Department. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for June, sponsored by Thundercat Technology, in partnership with Dell Technologies on Federal News Network.